Co-host DP and Patrizio. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello, everyone.
So today on our show, we're going to be talking about Uber and what seems like it's a very possible entrance into the Lower Mainland. So as Vancouverites anticipate the arrival of the easy-to-use, cheaper alternative taxi service, we at All Access Pass ask the question, what about accessibility? In the past, cities where these services are available, there have been cases where ride-sharing drivers have failed to accommodate their wheelchair and visually impaired passengers. In Vancouver, ordering an accessible taxi can be an arduous process. Some have even argued that Uber services will improve this. DP, what has your experience been using regular taxi services in the city?
My personal experiences with taxi services were and still are like a roller coaster ride. At times, it was smooth and I received great service, but then other times, it would be very frustrating and hair-pulling. Asking for and booking a wheelchair taxi is a great deal of a challenge for me, especially on weekends, evenings, or late nights because the drivers would be too busy picking up passengers from the airport as they made more money on those trips. There were also occasions where I would try to look or book a taxi around 4 p.m. and was told the drivers were in the middle of their shift change and the service wasn't available due to the lack of accessible vehicles, and later it would be running again in an hour or so. Some drivers were very unfriendly because they had to strap my wheelchair down, which was too time-consuming, or it was too frustrating for them to find a safe and accessible area to drop me off at my destination. Then, when TransLink bought their taxi pilot project in hopes it would improve the Handy Dart service and increase the number of frustrated customers who use the service, the taxi drivers were displeased because they had to be trained like a Handy Dart driver, even though they had years of experience. And they also had to be taught how to tie a wheelchair down properly so it wouldn't shift while the vehicle was moving. In my opinion, not all taxi drivers or services were terrible. There were some who were very accommodating to my needs. But my thoughts were always this, that my or anybody's safety comes first and foremost, and it shouldn't be taken so lightly. We all live once in this lifetime, so why not be kind and compassionate to others?
Awesome. Thanks, DP. So with that, in this episode, we're going to be diving straight into this but complicated Uber topic. Exactly. Maybe answering your question, because I know a lot of us are like, why isn't Uber here yet? So stick around. Before that, we're going to listen to a song here. This is by Hannah Epperson. This is Story Amelia.
You're all out of place, my babe. It's written on your face. Bring your souls to me. I'm not afraid to hear them. Bring your souls to me. This seems becoming
you have any awareness of what's been happening with newspapers in the last 10 years?
Not at all. I mean, truth is, I don't even get them anymore. I just read the news on my phone. It's so much better, and it's free.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The future of news media is in your hands. If you're interested in independent journalism and current affairs, CITR's News Collective is for you. Help hound down stories about diverse and underrepresented issues in the Lower Mainland for Democracy Watch, airing every Thursday at 5 p.m. Email volunteer at citr.ca to get involved.
Okay, welcome back to All Access Pass. Before the break, you were listening to a song called Count to Five by Canada's own Rye from their new album, Blood. And before that, you were listening to Hannah Epperson's song, Story Amelia.
Hey, this is DP, and we are going to be discussing share companies and accessibility on the show today. Why are we talking about this again? We are covering this topic because it is an important discussion in relation to experience on the accessibility side of transportation. Furthermore, we are going to be introducing share companies that exist within the Vancouver area and ones that may be introduced soon. This traditional transportation is hospitality service, and some of the more famous players are Uber and Airbnb. Today, my teammates and I are looking at how share companies make and neglect to make their services accessible for people with disabilities.
Now, Patrizio, I know you suggested this topic to us, one of the companies we were immediately drawn to was Uber. Can you tell us a little bit more about the accessibility situation with Uber?
Sure, Desi. Well, Uber is a really trendy company right now, especially in Vancouver, as it is dealing with the BC government to start operations probably this year or at the beginning of the next one. So we know that the disruption of traditional transportation and hospitality services by companies like Uber and Airbnb have created waves and caused different cities and agencies around the world to reevaluate how to regulate the services that these companies offer. Uber is another company that is part of the sharing economy. Drivers use their own vehicles to drive people from one place to another. So if they want to, they have a space in their car, they register on Uber's website, then an Uber's representative goes, evaluates the car, and they can start operating and being Uber drivers. Uber's mission statement says that they are committed to make transportation as reliable as running water, everywhere for everyone. However, how is that going? Despite Uber's sometimes lack regulations and recent scandals, people still love using it and other services like it due to their lower service, the ease of summoning a vehicle, and faster times. Let's remember one more time that transit is crucial in providing accessibility mobility options for people with disabilities, which is important to their quality of life. And many Canadians have disabilities. In fact, according to Statistics Canada, about 13% of our population are people with disabilities. So if you're Uber, you should expect that out of every 10 passengers, one can have a disability. Just imagine a wall, and when a person with disabilities is planning something, what comes to that person's mind of all the obstacles or breaks in the wall that limit them with every move? Just before me, DP was sharing her experience in using public transportation here in Vancouver. And she was mentioning many different examples, like buses with a lack of seating, taxis that will not stop or that are not accessible, and subways with limited accessible stops that are all barriers. Right now, people with disabilities find it hard to use Uber. And last year, for example, Uber faced a class action lawsuit alleging the company was violating New York's human rights laws because it didn't have enough wheelchair-accessible cars available for people who need them. And a fresher case happened in Ontario, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, in which a blind woman was not allowed to get inside an Uber car with her service dog. But at the same time, Uber has tried to mitigate this issue by introducing in selected locations the Uber WAP option. What is that? Well, it's a subservice within its main app that connects wheelchair users with specialized Uber partners or vehicles equipped with ramps or lifts. Also, there is Uber Assist, a program that lets customers request wheelchair-accessible vehicles or rides from drivers with special training. Legally speaking, its drivers are contract workers, not formal Uber employees who pilot these cars. And sometimes the driver's car or van cannot store a wheelchair, or a driver might refuse to take a ride. And programs like Uber Assist can break down that wall of exclusion, as I was talking about before, and create inclusion instead. Uber and other ride-hailing companies must provide access for the drivers to inclusion training that has been established or certified as an industry standard, such as the existing ones that are the ones provided by the Justice Institute of British Columbia, Taxi Host Pro, Roll Host, and ACT. At the same time, by simply following some basic customer service good practices, drivers could improve their service dramatically. They should be watching, observing of passengers and their abilities. If the person looks like she or he may need additional assistance, just approach the person in a friendly manner and introduce yourself. This is especially important when picking up someone who is blind or has low vision. Ask, well, how may I assist you? If you have a wheelchair, don't attempt to dismantle it without first asking the passenger, well, do you have a preference about how you store your wheelchair, your scooter, or your assistive device? Remember that this is almost like an extension of someone's body. In addition to that, there is also the necessity to allow service animals to travel on your vehicles. Service animals should be allowed to ride with the passengers on the floor of the backseat of the car. So drivers should listen, learn, and try to use a proper language. It surprised me while reading many different articles and using Uber's accessibility website. They have a website in which you can go through it and find all the services, information that people with disabilities can read and learn about how Uber is trying to mitigate and close the gaps related to its accessible services. They also have services for drivers that have disabilities. So how does it work? Well, if you open Uber, I don't know if here in Canada, but at least in Latin America, I have seen many different cases in which Uber sends the person that requested the car a notification saying that the driver, let's say, has a hearing impairment. So the customer is aware of that, and then Uber says to the customer, okay, you should do this. This person normally operates in this way. So be patient and until the car arrives. Finally, in my opinion, ride-hailing companies should provide an accessible trip bonus to drivers of wheelchair-accessible vehicles in recognition of the extra time required to deliver accessible service and the cost of operating an accessible vehicle. However, that cost must come from Uber or the ride-hailing company. At least that is my opinion from my business background. So people with disabilities, as was explained before, don't suffer from drivers that are impatient or that don't want to handle or to accept requests from people with disabilities due to it normally takes more time to accommodate them. Mm-hmm. And British Columbia is one of the few jurisdictions in North America without ride sharing, and that situation won't change unless companies like Uber commit to building solutions that support everyone's ability to easily move around their communities.
Oh, awesome. Thanks for that, Patrizio.
Oh, you're welcome.
So we're going to head into a break here, but when we come back, we're actually going to be talking about something maybe some of you know about, black market Uber. I don't know if you heard about that, but we're going to actually talk about our little run-in with black market Uber, and maybe is black market Uber accessible? What is it? Anyway, stick around for the break. Right now we're going to play a song. This is After the Storm by Kylie Uches with Tyler, the Creator, and Bootsy Collins.
Okay, do you want to read that one? And
whatever goes around eventually comes back to you. So you gotta be careful, baby, and look both ways before you cross my mind.
CITR 101.9 FM and BC Black History Awareness present Black History Month. We're featuring stories about extraordinary Black Canadians. One such individual is Emma Stark, the first female Black teacher on Vancouver Island. For her parents to make it to BC, they faced incredible challenges as pioneers. Emma's mother, Sylvia Estes, was born into slavery in Clay County, Missouri. In 1958, Emma moved with her family to Canada after alarm about the pressure from the South to make California a slave state. The family traveled with their herd of cattle through a storm so rough that they had to throw 40 horses overboard. Emma would have been just a toddler when she arrived on Salt Spring Island. At the age of 18, in August of 1874, Emma Stark was hired to teach in a one-room schoolhouse in the Cedar District, becoming the first female Black teacher on Vancouver Island with a salary of just $40 a month. She was a dedicated educator, even housing children that lived far away. This has been a PSA made in cooperation with CITR 101.9 FM and BC Black History Awareness.
Are you here because of me? No. I am here because of your light. Planets reach for immortality.
Oh, So, before the break, you heard the song After the Storm by Kylie Uchis featuring Tyler, the Creator, and Bootsy Collins.
This is DP once again, and with Uber coming into the Lower Mainland, the biggest matter at hand is negotiating regulations and regulations that could potentially protect people with disabilities. Perhaps you have used Uber in another city, but it didn't exist in Vancouver before, and now it is being brought in. But did you know that a black market Uber exists? There are 5 ride-hailing services that are currently operating in Richmond, according to the BC Taxi Association. They are considered to be operating freely or legally, and this means that the services of the ride-hailing companies are not regulated like that of a licensed taxi or rideshare like Uber. This week, the Access Collective looked into what the black market Uber operations look like and if they offer accessibility to their customers. The Access Collective coordinator, Desi, worked it alongside with Rach Lou, our spoken word coordinator executive at CITR. And Desi, how did it go?
So when you say that we looked into the operations, we tried really, really hard to look into the operations of black market Uber. So a lot of black market Uber actually exists actually within the city of Richmond. And like you said, there are 5 companies. Mm-hmm. They are mainly, actually, they are all the apps and services in Mandarin or Cantonese. So that's why we enlisted the help of our lovely spoken word exec Rach. So big shout out to Rach.
Yeah, thank you.
So what we did was we actually were looking to call and ask for accessible rideshare on the popular app UD Kwaichu. Excuse my pronunciation there. Unfortunately, because it's an app, we actually found no way to actually call them and ask, like, do you have an accessible vehicle? And if you go on their website, they direct you to download the app, mm-hmm. which you would imagine if you had a disability and you wanted to ask if you could get an accessible ride, it would kind of just be in the air.
Yeah.
You would just have to book it on the app and hope for the best. And then we tried to call their customer service line and got a default voicemail. We kind of hit a wall with this. Rach did look into the application to be a driver for UD Kwaichu, and there was no mention of accessibility. However, when you go to enter the information for your vehicle, they ask for your model, the license number, how many people you can take, even if you have a baby seat. However, there are no fields for if the applicant's vehicle is accessible. So that was our little look into black market Uber, something to keep in mind. With that, we're going to head into a break here. And when we come back, Patrice and I actually did a really sick interview this morning at 9 a.m. with MLA Stephanie Cadu, who was a part of the ride-sharing consultations at BC Parliament, which just ended this month. So stick around. Before that, you're going to hear a song. This is Like Line by Vancouver's own Prado.
I put you on. don't you fucking want me? I ain't another bitch you picked up from the choice tree. Hold me, I just wanna bros me. Then we unfolding, what the fuck you holding back? I'm exploding that, I'm a fucking rod, I ain't going back. I can stay focused, yo, I'm always on the attack. The fact that you ain't looking at me, I'm feeling that. But you can have your white girl in a white world, in a white house, can make it back. I'm a black girl in a black world, I got black eyes and a big ass of a map bag. Cause the dark is the home of every side. I can open your world, baby, you know why. I put you on like line, I put you on like line, I put you on like line, I put you on. I put you on like line, I put you on like line, I put you on like line, I put you on.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have entered a soundstage at
CITR
studio for a visit with
the folks who are
directing the exciting young star
Dama Dora
and
guest
Vin.
The Real World. The Real World is the UBC Film Society's radio show.
We talk about events, actors, directors,
and genres.
We come up with most of the genres.
And that's what makes it so jazzy.
It's a lot of fun and games, except not that many games.
If you think you can handle all of this, tune in Fridays from 11 to 12 on CITR 101.9 FM.
Shout out to Ed Norton!
Okay, welcome back to All Access Pass, folks. So, like we said over the break, we are having a lovely interview that we're going to play for you right now. So, in January, BC began its consultations for ride-sharing services. MLA Stephanie Cadeau brought up some important points about accessibility, and she chatted with Patrizio and I this morning. Stephanie Cadeau is a Liberal MLA from Surrey South and is the opposition critic for the Advanced Education, serving in the BC Legislative Assembly. Cadeau is also has a disability herself and is in a wheelchair. In fact, she is the first woman in a wheelchair to serve as cabinet minister for the BC Parliament, so that's really exciting. In the past, she has worked for the BC Paraplegic Association, now known as SciBC, as the Director of Marketing and Development. She has also worked as the Manager of Accessibility for the 2010 Legacies Now and has been the President of the Real Wheels Society. Thank you, Stephanie, for speaking to us this morning.
Hello, dear listeners. So today with us is MLA Stephanie Cadeau. She's a Liberal MLA for Surrey South and the opposition critic for Advanced Education, serving in the BC Legislative Assembly.
Awesome. So we're just going to start off here. So according to Uber's website, you were listed as saying yes to the question, do you support your party passing new rules to introduce ride sharing to BC in 2017? Is this still true?
Absolutely.
So why are you in support of introducing ride sharing to BC?
Well, you know, we are in a rapidly changing world, and technology is providing opportunities for disruption in all sorts of areas. Sometimes we like the effects of that, sometimes we don't. But one area where we've seen a disruption is in the transportation field, with companies like Uber and Lyft and others that have been moving in and operating in cities across Canada, across the U.S., across the world. And people like the service. It's something that Canadians, British Columbians, are asking for. They want to be able to use a service like that. So I think as legislators, it's our obligation to ensure that we create an environment, a legislative environment, in which that can happen, and take into account the things that we want to here in British Columbia to ensure people's safety and so on. But I don't think that it's right for government to stand in the way of progress.
So basically, you were telling us that if ride-sharing services become legal in Vancouver, it will also, I mean, the idea is for it to operate across all BC as well.
Right. So each company that might choose to operate would have the opportunity to choose where they operate, just like A&W or, you know, any other company, right? They don't have to operate, but what we are suggesting and what we would hope is that the legislature would create an environment in which they are able to legally enter the market. And what I think the reality is with some, you know, in British Columbia, we have pretty good transportation mm-hmm. in Vancouver. Now, you know, some people will argue with me on that and say, oh, this is terrible and we can never get... But the reality is we do, in the major centers, have pretty good transportation options. But small communities across our province, where lots of people live, including people with disabilities, there aren't a lot of transportation options just due to the size of the market. And if these disruptive technologies and these companies can come in and offer a service that provides options for people, that's good, and we should encourage it.
That's right. And just talking about those options, what has Uber proposed you in terms of accessibility? Because we know that, at least in Toronto, in order to make these services available, Uber offers Uber Web, that is a special service for wheelchair users,
yeah.
and Uber Assist, that if the user requests, he can or she can request a driver that has a special training. Meanwhile, right. in Ottawa, the company, well, agreed to pay like a 7-cent fee for every ride it provides in the city, and right now that is like a collective pool that is destined to be invested in any project mm-hmm. related to an accessibility project.
Right. So I think what we're seeing across the world, and certainly companies like Lyft and Uber who have been vocal in our marketplace mm-hmm. About wanting to enter the market and talking about their potential services, have acknowledged that this is an area that needs attention and has to be looked at. And in different communities and different places, they're doing that in different ways. And at this point, from the research that I've seen and the presentations that were made to the Select Standing Committee on Crown Corporations that reviewed ride sharing, I would say that nobody's necessarily found a solution that's perfect. But jurisdictions are trying things to determine how best to make sure that service is available. In BC here, the ride hailing committee of the legislature that put out its report in February that I was part of, we heard a lot of during our consultations, mm-hmm. and we did a lot of thinking on this, and collectively unanimously, we recommended a number of things for British Columbia, that if ride sharing is going to, ride hailing, the terms get mixed up, if ride hailing is going to come to British Columbia, then in terms of accessibility, we want to ensure for British Columbians that we don't see a service decrease as a result, and in fact that we do see service increases. So we've made a number of recommendations. First one is that requiring all ride-hailing companies of a certain size to achieve a service guarantee for accessible service that's equal to their other customers. We've suggested that for all ride-hailing vehicles that are not accessible and are picking up your average ride, that they should be assessed a levy that could be used to enhance accessible services in some fashion, but we haven't articulated what that might be. We want to ensure that that all of the companies have their apps be accessible, and we want to make sure that drivers have had training, and we've suggested that there's an opportunity to provide ride-hailing companies ensure that ride-hailing companies provide a sort of a trip bonus to drivers of accessible vehicles in recognition that those vehicles are more expensive, they cost more to operate, and the service, delivering the service to a person with disability can be more expensive in terms of it takes more time to secure the wheelchair and the vehicle and so on. But so I think, you know, we've made a set of recommendations for government to take and take a look at. It's now up to the government of British Columbia to bring in the legislation.
And what has been the reception from Uber Canada with these recommendations?
Well, Uber and Lyft and the other companies that presented and that we've talked to and that I've talked to or have reached out to me all have been, I would say, very open to looking at how do they do this the best way. They recognize they're not, because they rely on individuals with private vehicles, they're not likely to have a fleet of accessible vans show up. But, of course, the reality is as well that not everybody with a disability requires transportation in an accessible vehicle. So, you know, you're trying to balance all of the pros and cons and the options and provide the best service possible. And they've been very, I would suggest that the companies have been very willing to do what's necessary and do what British Columbia thinks can enhance that service and make that available.
And then BC isn't the first province or even world city to get a ride sharing service.
Right.
What are some of the was that kind of stuff that you kept in mind during the consultations, mm-hmm. like learning from other cities? Because I know in the past, for
Absolutely.
Example, there have been some accessibility concerns. It was in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we took a look at what we could find in the way of data. We asked a number of sort of experts in the field to present their knowledge to us in this regard, and you want to try and build on things that work, not on things that don't. But there may be some things that are unique to British Columbia. As I mentioned in the previous answer, the reality is that in our big cities, we have pretty good service in comparison to other cities. And so we want to make sure that we build upon that and don't sort of cannibalize that with the entry of new providers. So I think that those things are really important. I don't think that there's a you know, necessarily an easy or quick solution. I think it would take some trial and error to some degree. But I think that the companies that want to operate in British Columbia will see fit to make sure that equitable access is available.
Okay. In October of last year, you tweeted, "It is 2017. Couldn't get an accessible taxi from either of two companies for over 1 hour and a half.
Yeah.
Bring on rideshare. Do you anticipate waiting times will improve for people with disabilities with the help of Uber?"
Well, you know what? That would be my hope, because the reality is that accessible cabs, and in that case, sometimes I use one and sometimes I don't, but in that case, that day I needed one. The reality is that sometimes those cabs are busy transporting people who don't have disabilities and don't require that specialized transport, but they're just, you know, they've got a fare somewhere else. And so my hope would be that if we have ride-hailing available and other companies are operating, that more people would choose those options as they are able, which would mean that the accessible fleets would be available for the purpose they were, you know, ultimately intended, which is the transport of people with disabilities.
That's right. Well, and have you used ride-sharing services such as Uber or Lyft in other cities before?
No, I haven't, actually. Now, you know, mostly because it's fairly new, and frankly, when I've traveled, I've had other transportation arranged, you know, through friends or so on. So I haven't needed it. But I do know a lot of people that use it regularly when they're traveling, including people with disabilities that have really embraced the technology, embraced the idea, and like it. So I think in British Columbia, our hope would be that we can welcome that to the market here and just ensure that people's safety and things like insurance and some regulation are in place to make sure it's an enhancement to our system. And I think that should be the goal.
So kind of going back to the question we asked before about rideshare kind of as like an improvement to the taxi mm-hmm. service or transport services in mm-hmm. BC. We know, you know, with taxis in Vancouver, there can be a longer wait time. The drivers might not be, you know, completely understanding mm-hmm. to someone with a disability. Mm-hmm. And then we have like HandyDart, for example, whose services were, you know, they're lobbying to improve. There's a big concern with these kind of services reaching out to rural communities mm-hmm. where there are people with disabilities who would need these kind of transport services. Has Uber said anything, or has that kind of been addressed through the consultations?
Well, I would say that, first off, you know, in an enhancement of the service, that is ideally what it is, right? We have a good transportation model conglomeration, whatever you want to call it, in Vancouver, for sure, and in the major centers like Kelowna or Victoria. In the smaller centers, it's more of a challenge, and sort of any option might be an improvement over, you know, the fact that some of these communities don't have taxis at all, never mind accessible taxis. So there's that. But I think it's important to remember, too, that we're talking about, you know, bringing in an option, another transportation option to enhance the system for all people, and all people of all disabilities disabilities. And some of those people, you know, could see other benefits from the introduction of a service like this, in that it could be an employment opportunity for somebody who's deaf or hard of hearing. Perhaps they may choose to drive an Uber or drive for a rideshare company. Others, people with disabilities, seniors that require a little assistance to and from their destination, may find that some of the services offered by a company like Lyft has offered in other communities, where they have sort of an enhanced service where the driver is trained and assists, those things could be really beneficial. So I think that's the opportunity that exists, and whether or not companies deliver on the promise of good service and so on really is left up to the market.
No, and competition is always good in the sense that it will make already established taxis companies to improve their services towards people with disabilities, right?
Right, and I think we need to always be encouraging all We're not there yet, right? I mean, we need to encourage all businesses to improve their understanding of disability issues, understanding of how to best serve customers with this, all different types of disabilities, how they can improve their workforce by hiring people with disabilities and welcoming people into the fold. We need to continue to do that. It's not done. It's not complete. It's barely started, in my opinion, and we need to continue that. We need to continue to encourage and demand to some degree that people have access to and are required to take training in these issues. And that would include people with disabilities learning about other people with other disabilities that are unlike themselves. So I think, you know, opportunities like you have on the radio to share these kinds of challenges and opportunities are fantastic. And I think that as legislators, we have the opportunity in Victoria to ensure that the law reflects that as well.
Oh, okay. So kind of a general question that I know quite a few people are asking, and it's a bit more broad. Why do you think BC has waited so long to bring in Uber and other ride-sharing services?
I really don't know on that entirely. I think, you know, the reality is that when anything is new, there are early adopters. There are people who right away are comfortable and engaged and you know, sort of trialing and learning. And then there are others who are standing back saying, oh, I'm not sure about this. Oh, it's a fad. It'll pass. You know, the reality is that there's always people on all ends of that spectrum, and that would be the same in your government. You have people from all ends of the spectrum in your government. So I think to some degree these things take time. There's also the reality that in government there's always a more work to be done than there is time, and so things take priority or precedence over other things. You know, I think all three parties in the legislature have expressed a desire to see ride hailing in the province. We, our party promised to have it in by December and had a bill prepared. The NDP, when they took power, said that they would have it in by December and didn't meet that timeline. Instead, they referred it to a committee for more discussion and hired a consultant to do a review of the impacts on the taxi industry. So, you know, we're waiting now and encouraging now that the NDP government move and get this legislation in place. We've provided, the committee's provided a report with all sorts of recommendations in how to get that done, and now I think it's important that the government do it and meet their commitment that they made to voters. But I certainly don't think that that there's, at this point, any sort of apprehension, really. It's now just a matter of getting it done.
All right. So we reached out to Twitter to ask, what are people's thoughts on Uber coming? And so kind of with that, for the last two episodes, we've been doing things on share companies. And I think with the idea of share companies, sometimes people feel that there's kind of that because it's a share company, because it's a private company, there's not as many regulations or put out. So what would you say to people who would, you know, like, oh, Uber might not be as accessible because there's no no one monitoring?
Well, and that in fact is why at this point it's not legal in British Columbia for them to operate, and why government, all parties took time to think about this, and frankly why we will look to introduce legislation, or the NDP government now will look to introduce legislation, I would expect, to allow them to operate. But in doing so, that sets out the regulation, the regulations and the terms under which they can operate, and the rules, the law for that. And we can take into account those things that people are concerned about in terms of safety, in terms of oversight, in who's going to monitor these companies, who's going to monitor that they are operating the way Canadians expect or British Columbians expect. That is the role of the legislature, to provide that structure.
You were also mentioning about the data and how the data that Uber can access through its future riders and from the riders that they are having right now. will benefit, I mean, their society. Have you talked with Uber in terms of, okay, how you can leverage that data that you're going to be gathering right. in order to improve the transportation services in BC?
Right. Well, it was actually an issue that we discussed a lot in the committee because the reality is, you know, we're making a lot of assumptions and the companies themselves in their promotion of their ability to operate are making a lot of assumptions about things that will or won't happen. And there, you know, there are members that believe strongly there's a challenge here in terms of more cars on the road. Others don't believe it's going to add cars, but actually believe it could actually, you know, just provide a benefit that's needed. So one of the opportunities is for that data to actually be compiled and shared openly. And so that one of the recommendations, or actually multiple recommendations of the committee, relate specifically to data and to the fact that if companies are going to operate, that government should have access to the data.
Awesome. Well, I think we're about to end off here. I just wanted Great. To ask you one last question. What have been your personal thoughts after coming out of these rideshare consultations? I know it's been quite the process.
Yeah, it was. It was a fun process, though. It was interesting. And I think, you know, there are always, with any new technology, any decision government broadly needs to make, there are pros, there are cons, there are things that will be good, and there are consequences that you know, and unintended consequences that one has to consider, and you do your best in pulling that all together. You know, I think overall, I think that this provides an opportunity. I think it's a way that the world society is moving, and like other things in the shared economy, you know, there will be some things that work, some things that turn out to not be so good. Just like social media, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good things about social media. There's also a lot of things that aren't so good, as we've seen, and certainly is very public right now in the States. So, you know, I think the reality is that what I came out of this with is that this is potentially an opportunity to enhance services for British Columbians broadly, and that there's a real opportunity to leverage their introduction to benefit people with disabilities. And so that's my hope and my goal.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we really appreciate the work you're doing down at BC Parliament, helping with getting rideshare ready for BC.
Well, thank you very much. And I hope you'll have me on another time. Thanks
awesome.
Very much.
Absolutely.
Awesome. And with that, that wraps up this episode of All Access Pass. Now, Sylvia has just pointed out that I said BC Parliament twice, and I meant to say BC Legislator. So correction on my part. Sorry, folks.
If you are interested in joining our team or think that there is an issue we should bring up on our show, please send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Thank you to Stephanie Cardieu on speaking to us, Raj and Addison with helping us with today's show.
Remember to like us on our All Access Pass Facebook page.
If you're on Twitter and Instagram, please follow us at @access_CITR.
And as always, if you miss on any of our live shows or want to listen again, you can listen to our podcast shows on CITR.ca by going to the search box and searching All Access Pass.
Thank you for listening, and tune into our show next week, Wednesday at 4 p.m.
Stick around for Arts Report, which is up next.
Everyone. Oh, and we're going to leave you with a song here.
Oh, wait.
Yes, well, the next song, it's being played by Tony Melendez. He's from Nicaragua. He was born without arms, but he plays with his feet. The name of the song is That Is What Hate Will Do to You.
Enjoy.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey there, Mr. Jones. Why in the matter all alone? What's going on? Could you use a piece of pie?
or a new friend in your life, you don't look so right. I could tell you about, hey, a thing or two. It will lift you up no matter what you do. It will tell you up, it will bring you down. It will turn your heart inside out.
No matter,
that's what hate will do to you. It will make you cry, it will make you lie. It will take so much from you and I.
No matter,
that's what hate will do to you. Hey there, Mr. Jones. Looks like your nose has grown.
Has grown.
The wolf that kept trying. I'm not little red, you know. I could tell you about, hey, a thing or two. It will lead you up no matter what you do. It will tell you up, it will bring you down. It will turn your heart inside out.
No matter,
that's what hate will do to you.
Quarter are hiring a new station manager. Just asking for a friend, but if I know someone who would be great for this position, how would they apply? Well,